Israel, Moshe Eris, Israel, Vial Yovad Israel, Omerim, Shma Israel. Shomer Goyechod, Shmor Sheiris, Amechod, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Shomer Goy Kadosh, Shemor Sheiris Am Kadosh, V'al Yovad Goy Kadosh, Am Shalshim B'Shalosh Kedushos, V'Kadosh, Shomer Yisroel.
Welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish Soul Music. I'm your host, Charlie Bernhout. For those of you who have good memories, you know that was the late Seymour Rockoff, wonderful chazan, a great friend. In 2 weeks, on the February 12th and 13th, the Kesher Israel Congregation in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where Seymour was a chazan for many years, 30 years, they're having a cantorial Shabbaton, a tribute to cantor Seymour Rockoff, and our friend cantor Yaakov Motzin will be there for that weekend. And it's certainly a wonderful memorial for a wonderful person. We'll be featuring interviews and some of Seymour's memorable recordings throughout these 2 hours. So let's get right to the interviews. I've had some, I think you'll find these of interest. First is a conversation with Seymour Rockoff's wife. By the way, Seymour died in July of this past year. Okay, so let me just get this, ready. Okay. I'm very pleased to have with me on the phone Dina Rockoff, the wife of the late cantor Seymour Rockoff. Shalom, Dina. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Okay. I know there's a tribute to Seymour's memory at the Kesher Israel Congregation just in a week or so, on the 12th and 13th.
Yes, it is. And we're very excited about that.
Yes, and it's wonderful that Chazan Yaakov Motzin will be there for the event.
He's a longtime friend of Seymour's, a longtime colleague. As a matter of fact, a number of years ago, we had a big cantorial concert, and Seymour brought in cantor Motzin, cantor Gildor, and several other cantors whose names seemed to escape me at the point. It was an absolutely wonderful program.
Right. Well, tell us a little bit about your husband, your late husband, Seymour.
Okay. It's hard to describe him because he was so many different things to so many different people. He was chazan, where he enjoyed the melodies, he enjoyed nusach, and he enjoyed putting various passages to music. And because he was so well-versed while being taught by his father as a young boy, his Hebrew was excellent. And therefore, as he would sing, the words and the melodies would have the real meaning for people who did not understand by the lilt or by the quiet or by the loudness of his voice. You could actually understand exactly what was going on. He made many, many recordings. He made recordings for himself. He made recordings for other people. They would call him and ask for some help or a passage or a correction. As a matter of fact, he did Al Koel in English for Naomi Shemer. That was popular a number of years ago. He did writing for Mordechai Ben David. He did writing for Paul Zim. He did some children's tapes, Sookie and Ding. He was very, when you would call him up, he would be very accommodating to help you with the correct Hebrew phrase and give you the melody that would most suit that best. We have maybe 1,000 tapes downstairs that he's recorded, different parts of Nusach, different parts of davening, and he always had a real desire to make sure that the ending of one parsha and the beginning of the next, there was something in common with them. That was one of his big things. Of course, the pronunciation was another key. He could not understand why they would make Am Yisroel Echai instead of Am Yisroel, or they did Am Yisroel, Am Yisroel. He said it's not that, it's Am Yisroel. So that's where he corrected a lot of different things, and some people were happy, some people not so. Now, you know, Sima also had a rabbinic degree.
No, I read that in the Obit.
Oh, yes, he was a rabbi. We were in several shtelas. And in those cases, he would be the rabbi, and he would do all the rabbinic duties that morning, and then he would turn around and walk down from the bema and begin to sing what the kantorial part should be. Because in some of the congregations, you just had one. So he was both. Singing.
Well, that was great. There was no competition between the rabbi and the cantor.
No, there was no competition. There was one and the same.
Yeah, so that was great.
He has many, many records of many of the greats, which he would listen to at length. But Seymour also wrote music that was, he wrote with Mordechai Ben David. I mean, with this time he wrote with Marty Davidson.
Yes.
And they were called Rechnitz to Reject.
Uh-huh.
Now, what was Rechnitz to Reject? Many years ago, a number of guys got together, and they were saying, you know, we really should do something funny. We really should come up with something which is interesting. Well, Seymour liked the show tune. And he came up with Old Man River to Cold Chalk River.
Yes.
He really enjoyed that. He did Borough Park to New York, New York.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, we got a couple of calls from people that said, hey, they're singing your Borough Park to New York, New York, which, of course, we thought was hilarious because it was the other way around.
Right.
But Seymour is very proper, and he would, where possible, send out a note and ask for permission. And one of his best ones was when he sent something to Michael Jackson. There was a song I sing called Beat It, and he wanted to do Eat It for Pesach, the different things you eat on Pesach.
Uh-huh.
And some of the songs were very funny and very clever, and some were kiddie things, almost like nonsenses where parents would call us and say, okay, it's time for you to do another kiddie tape, because all we know is driving from Pennsylvania to New York, we're singing the same songs, we know the words. How about giving us some new material? So he would sit down and write a few new ones and put them out there, and that would be it. He traveled a lot doing performances. And his thing was that whenever he went to a community, he asked if there was a day school nearby. And he'd call the day school and say, look, I'm going to be here doing a concert, doing a program. I would love to stop in the day school and give you a little something for the children. And they would say, sure, why not? He didn't care about the money. He cared about furthering the children's education, bringing them something that was fun, but at the same time, knowledgeable, like tie a yellow ribbon. He did to tie a pair of tefillin, which was actually how you actually did that mitzvah of putting tefillin on. And if you go out in the Midwest, maybe someone doesn't know what that's all about, but they're listening to the song and they're getting the message. He said you got to educate them, but subtly.
Yes.
Now, Nassim was not always subtle, I will admit. But he had this knack. I believe he's been in, oh, I would say maybe 40 of the states, 40 of the proper cities. And I think he was in Israel. He was in Canada. He was a bachan once at a wedding in Belgium.
No.
And that was his biggest kick because they came, they picked him up, they took him to this beautiful hotel. There was this wonderful thing going. He says, what do they need me for? But they needed him to organize it, to make it run, to make it flow. And he said he had a blast. It was so much fun.
Interesting.
It was a shame that they paid him for having so much fun.
Well, he was certainly so creative. I mean, his creativity was boundless.
He got that from his mother. He got the correct pronunciation and the dicta from his late father, Chaim. You know, Shimon was born in Pennsylvania, and they lived here until he was, I guess, 10 years old. So a lot of his education was from the father. But when he came to school here in New York, he was very far ahead of himself, and his dictum was impeccable. His mother, on the other hand, had a flair for the shows, and she would come up with all these little ditties and make up all these little songs, and he would hear them, and then he would, of course, come up with his own. So he learned that at a young age.
Interesting.
And it followed him all the way through. You know, when he entered YU, he was going to go into an accounting program or something like that. At that point when he went, they didn't. So he decided he would do music. And, of course, that was a little unheard of, too, at the moment, but it worked out.
Yes.
And his aunt said, you love singing. Why not just go in and become a chazan? So that's exactly what he did.
I didn't realize he was ill. Did he die suddenly, or was there a...
Yes, he did. He died very suddenly. As a matter of fact, he was working on something for Paul Zim. And he said to me, Dina, I'll have it ready by the time you get home from the office. I said, fine. I spoke to him at 11 o'clock. He said he was going to get the last part down, and I would hear it. Well, when I came home, unfortunately, he had passed away.
Wow.
So that was how sudden it was.
How old was he?
72.
Uh-huh.
We were married almost 40 years, and I can honestly tell you there was not a day that there wasn't some fun or some laugh or something in it. We were quite different from each other. But that difference only made it a very, very strong bond.
Now, it was a heart attack then?
Yes, that's what they believe it was, yes.
And he had no history of any of that, did he?
He had high blood pressure and a little bit this, a little bit that. But, you know, he was on medication for that. So
I see.
The doctor assumed that would have been it. It was quick. He said it was painless. There was no disturbance of anything around him. I mean, the desk was just as it should be. Nothing fell over. So he just took a breath and that was it.
Wow.
He was creative up until the last point.
That's amazing.
He had been a little depressed for a little bit of time, about a year or so before. But then he seemed to... come out of that little funk and then was writing again and was doing things again, singing again. And that was it.
Well, whenever I met Seymour over the years at cantorial conventions and at concerts, and I'm a Jersey boy. I know he was in Jersey for a brief period. And he always had a smile, you know.
There was a certain
presence about him that was so positive and joyous, and he always had a...
That's what he was. He was joyous. He always smiled. As a matter of fact, I can remember a while back, you know, Seymour had a head for music, for davening, for laning, for all of that. But Seymour did not have a head for some practical stuff. Like, we once went to the supermarket, and he says, "Oh, what's that?" And I said, "Well, that's where you go ahead and you check your orders out yourself." "Really?" he says. I said, "Yeah." I said, "You want to try it?" "Okay." So we went over there, and he looked at this, and he says, "Well, how does this work?" And I explained to him, you have to press a button to start the machine, then you put your things through it, it records the price, and then you put the item in a bag. "Okay." I said, "Go ahead, try it." Well, he got so upset because it didn't click right, it didn't beep right, and then he kept cooking the same thing 3 or 4 times. I said, "Seymour, stop, you only have 1 can of that.
Right.
Put that in the bag and go for something else."
He didn't understand. He didn't understand.
He had no hatred, no hatred for that. That was the furthest thing from his mind. Couldn't care less about that.
Okay.
But you give him a question, you give him a Torah, you give him a blot Gemara, he would tear through that.
Interesting.
He was a very interesting man.
There were children?
We have 2 children, a daughter, Terry, and a son, Stephen.
Are they musical?
That's it. Oddly enough, Terry is a little bit musical. Stephen used to play the keyboard for a little while I was in college, but he's not touching that right now.
Uh-huh.
Our daughter married Mark Infield, who became the next generation of, like Seymour, he became involved with Schlockrock. He was a member of Schlockrock with Lenny Solomon and a bunch of the other guys. And they did all kinds of shtick that Seymour did not do. Seymour had a different, what he wanted to accomplish in this music with Marty Davidson was different than what Schlockrock came about as the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was very interesting to see how well Mark, our son-in-law, and Seymour, they did everything very well. Mark's a shul chazan now. I mean, he's been davening here with us for a few years now. And I look at Terry and says, "You know, you married your father." And she'll look at me and say, "Yeah, how about that? Isn't that something?"
By the way, I interviewed Mark, and it will be on this program also. It's a very fine interview.
Well, he is wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's a wonderful man. As a matter of fact, when Mark called us up, well, it started a little bit further back. Seymour was a rabbi up in Liberty, New York, in the Catskills.
Mm-hmm.
And we would always go over, and he would entertain at sometimes Grossinger's. He would entertain at Brown's sometimes, and I don't think they're there anymore. And then he would go with Nat at another one. I cannot think of it was at the Homework. Another one. I cannot think. Mm-hmm. The Pine View. And the Pine View had a beautiful, real baby grand piano. And my husband used to want to go over and play that baby grand piano just because the sound was so magnificent.
Uh-huh.
And it was on a wooden floor, and he got the best acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
And who had the key all the time but Mark Infield? So Seymour had to run over to Mark, get the key so he could play.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, Evelyn and Nat would have Seymour come and entertain. And at that time, my dad was alive. And he would come and watch some of this, and he'd say, "That's a nice young fella over there. What's his name?" And I'd say, "His name is Mark." It turned out, after we spoke, Mark played one of Seymour's first concerts when Mark was 16 down in the Irvington Hotel in Lakewood, New Jersey.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And Mark's mother had to drive him to that. And it was years later they got connected again.
Uh-huh.
And to make a long story short, a number of years later, and Mark had called up and said, "What do you guys think? I'm going to ask your daughter to marry me." I said, "What have you been waiting for?" And then someone once said to Mark, "You're going to marry Rockoff's daughter? Are you sure you can handle that?" He said, "Absolutely, I can handle that. We're great friends." So that's how that went.
Thank God.
But he was a remarkable gentleman.
Yes.
And he was that. He was a gentleman.
Yes.
He was respectful to everyone, and they knew that. And people could call him with questions. He discussed things with them. He never discussed what the question was.
Uh-huh.
That type.
I know he was well respected in the cantorial community, and it's a great loss.
Yeah.
A great loss for all of us.
Yes, it is. They honored him about a couple of years ago. He had been in an auto accident, and they honored him. And he said at that time, he says, "This is almost like a roast. I didn't know I was so good." He said, "I'm just me." He said, "I'm just me."
Well,
he adored his grandchildren. who was Izzy Hani and the twins, Malki and Hani.
That's great.
And he got the biggest kick out of teaching them how to sing. And he would, as 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, they would hold the microphone and they would try to sing. He would sing things to them. They would sing it back. And they enjoyed it. He really enjoyed that.
That's wonderful.
One other point that I can add.
Sure.
This man never took a vacation, except when we went out to other communities. Our community would ask us to go to communities that had small communities, to go to their synagogue, mm-hmm. to show what a chazan does, to go, what can a rabbi do? How can you be effective? And when other people would say to him, Rakoff, why don't you take a sabbatical? You're there 10 years. You're there 15 years. You're 20. You're 25. You're going to be there 30 years. Why don't you go and take a vacation? He said, I have a vacation. Where would I possibly want to go? I have the most wonderful community. He says, everything is fine. He says, we live on a lake. I look at the water. Why do I want to go anywhere? I don't have to run away from anything. This is my vacation.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't want to take vacation. I did. He didn't think it was necessary.
Uh-huh. Well, listen, Dina, thank you so much for sharing your memories of Seymour. And I'm sure that this event, it will be on February 12th and 13th at the Kesher mm-hmm. Israel Congregation mm-hmm. in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I'm sure
and we hope you're going to join us. I heard you might.
Yes, I'm going to try my best. If not, I look forward to meeting with you either then or at some other time. But
that's perfect.
Okay, so thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing this. And this will be a part of a 2-hour special that will be up next week on my program.
Okay, and if there's something you don't like, just get rid of it.
Okay, everything
thank
is fine.
Thank you, Charlie. Be well.
Okay,
be
shalom.
Well.
Shalom.
Bye, shalom.
You know, well, you don't know this. When I do these interviews, I usually tell the person that I'm interviewing that I don't edit, you know, unless there was something really important that the person would want deleted. I just make the call, and as you can tell, it's a free-flowing session. Dina was mentioning a couple of selections. We're going to hear some others that she mentioned, but the one, Old Man River, was Seymour came up with Cold Chopped Liver. So let's hear. This is from Rexenser Rejects. Cantor Seymour Rockoff.
Then I return to my Shabbos table after I spend so much time in shul. I am so hungry that I'm not able to keep far away from that dish so cruel. Every week I take one taste, then I spread it on a cracker like a fleshy paste. It tastes so good, I clean the plate. A few hours later, I don't feel so great. Cold chopped liver, that pardon giver. I shouldn't choose it, but I can't refuse it. It keeps me groaning, I keep on groaning, oy vey. I skip the chicken, although each shtickle is finger licking. Just cold chopped liver, what keeps me groaning, oy vey. Some matzo meal, a little chicken fat. Chopped liver from falling flat. Salt and pepper, it is palm spice. I chop in a few onions, then I pay the price. I must promise that come next Shabbos. I won't surrender to that stomach bender, that conscious liver, what keeps me crawling. Oy vey.
Okay, that is from volume 2 of Rechnas Rejex, and there are 9 volumes. And, by the way, they are available at Mostly Music, and I recommend that those of you who want to hear something rather, there's a lot of very, very funny shticks on there, and of course a lot of Seymour Rockoff. Again, that was from the second album, and later on you'll hear an interview with Martin Davidson where Martin mentions that they're working on number 10. Okay, this is, Adina mentioned tie a yellow ribbon. This was tie a pair of tefillin. see where rock off.
I wear them almost every day, but not on Shabbos when they're tucked away. Since I was bar mitzvah every morning without fail, I put on what my Zadie brought from Eretz Yisroel, from Eretz Yisroel. Each day I tie a pair of tefillin round my arm and head. After all night long, I'm asleep in bed. If I don't tie those tefillin round my arm and head, the day don't begin, I've committed a sin. My neshama's dead. Tie those pair of tefillin round my arm and head. The finest Rebbe that I had, no one taught me better than my dad. I can still remember it when he first showed me how. Though it's been so many years, it seems like just right now. It seems like just right now. Round my arm and head. After all night long, I'm asleep in bed. If I don't tie those tefillin round my arm and head, the day don't begin, I've committed a sin. My neshama's dead. If I don't tie those pair of tefillin round my arm and head. So now I speak to you, my son. This mitzvah is a very special one. Every weekday morning when you pray with Kavanah, you should kiss your tefillin when you say the Kriyat Shema. Say the Kriyat Shema. For you have tied a pair of tefillin round your arm and head. After all night long, you're asleep in bed. If you don't tie those tefillin round your arm and head, don't begin, you've committed a sin. Your neshama's dead. If you don't tie those pair of tefillin round your arm and head.
Well, you know, I realize this is a generational thing because some of you may never have heard the song Tie a Yellow Ribbon. Yeah, I guess, I don't know what generation that would be. Maybe 30, 35 years ago. Okay, we're next going to be hearing the interview with Seymour's son-in-law, Mark Infield, that Dina was mentioning, Mark. Here he is.
Very pleased to have with me on the phone Mark Infield, who is the son-in-law of the late Seymour Rockoff. Shalom. How are you, Mark?
I'm fine today. Thank you, Bernie.
Okay. First of all, tell us about your relationship with Seymour.
Well, I actually met him about 15 years ago, 15 years before I became his son-in-law. I was in high school at the time, and I was a drummer with a trio that performed at New Jersey NCSY Shabbatones. NCSY is the National Conference of Synagogue Youth, youth movement from the OU.
Uh-huh.
And one of the communities that we performed in was Long Branch, New Jersey, which at that time Seymour was the chazan in the local shul and Brothers of Israel in Elberon. And so I met him then. We were hired, this trio, we were hired to come down and play a concert there. I was in 10th grade, so it was in the spring of 1977. We were hired to come down and play a Saturday night concert there in March between Purim and Pesach. And they scheduled a little too close to Shabbos, so we were still setting up when the time to start came. So they had Seymour come out in front of the curtain. They wheeled the piano out, and he stalled. Sang some song. He actually started singing the songs from the Haggadah to stall for us. Only he would think of doing something like that.
Right.
And then flash forward a few years later, the early 80s, I was working my first summer job. I was with the house band at the Leibowitz Pineview Hotel in Fallsburg, New York, in the Catskills.
Uh-huh.
And during the day, I helped out with the daily programming. And one day I look at the program and I see who's coming to do the show that night, but Cantor Seymour Rockoff. I said, wow, he's coming all the way up from Long Branch. Unbeknownst to me, he was not there anymore. He was already the rabbi in Liberty, New York, which was less than half an hour away. And that would be the first time I got to hear his Hineni, which I told you about,
yes,
which is on one of the Refnitzer Rejects albums, which is, I consider, the funniest thing he's ever written. I remember I was on the floor laughing when I heard him sing it, and the audience loved it, of course. And after that, he started coming over to share with me new stuff that he was working on, because he found out I had the key to the piano in the lobby. So he would come over, he said, quick, give me the key, I got to show you this new song I wrote. And then the next time I would see him would be December of 91. I was then I'm one of the original members of the Schlock Rock group. We're actually about to start our 30th anniversary celebration with a performance next Monday night in Tel Aviv.
Oh, really?
Yes. So looking forward to that. Myself and some of the other originals are coming back together to perform.
Uh-huh. How many albums have they recorded, Schlock Rock?
It's the low 30s, if I remember correctly.
Hmm.
I don't remember the exact number.
Right.
But it's quite a few. And so...
By the way, what instrument do you play?
As I mentioned before, I started out as a drummer, percussionist, but I also play keyboards and saxophone, clarinet, and flute. And for Schlock Rock, I actually play saxophone.
Uh-huh.
So next week I will be playing saxophone when we perform in Tel Aviv, and I also sing. We were hired, three of us were brought down to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to play a bar mitzvah. It was the son of the local caterer. His name is Norman Grass. And so it was his son. And I walk into shul. We were there for Shabbos, of course. And we walk into shul Friday night. And they were in the middle of Kabbalah Shabbos. And I hear the chazan singing. And I said, wait a second. I know that voice. I've heard that voice before.
Uh-huh.
And we came around the corner into the sanctuary. And, of course, it was Seymour. I said, wow. Everywhere I go, I run into him. So, and my wife had come down. She was living in Muncie at the time, and she came down to help out with the bar mitzvah. So we had met once before, And that was that weekend we connected, and a month later we started dating.
Uh-huh.
And a year later we got engaged, December of 92. And 6 months later we got married, and I became Seymour's son-in-law.
So. Wow. Well, he certainly was an artist. He was a fine cantor, but he had such a great sense of humor. And many of my listeners may not realize that you know, how many of the Rechnitzer Reject fantastic selections, you know, starting with Borough Park and the Bills and so many others, were all written by Seymour.
Yes, he has a tremendous talent, and he was very sharp-witted. He was very quick. I have other friends in the music business who have called on him to, you know, for assistance with lyrics, and you know, they called him. They expected him that he would take a couple days and then call them back. Only it didn't work that way. He came right out with instantly came out with ideas, and like it blew their minds. Like, Seymour, take your time. No, I got, you know, he was very fast, very quick, and very funny.
Where was he born?
He was born in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. So he's a real Pennsylvanian.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Interesting. And he was at Kesher Israel for how many years?
30 years.
Well, that's great.
Sorry, no, he was born in Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Johnstown.
So I had the wrong town. But yeah, Harrisburg was, I think, was, I believe that was the longest he was in any place. He was in a number of different places. Some places he was rabbi, some places he was chazan, some places both.
Uh-huh.
I actually had I'm a chazan myself, and I was hired for about 6 years. I was a chazan in Long Island City, New York, and in the shul where about 30 years earlier, Seymour was the rabbi. I believe that was his first shteller.
Uh-huh.
And when he found out I was going there, he said, that was my shul.
Interesting.
And the people there all remembered him.
Yes. Well, the Jewish world is certainly a very small brotherhood.
That's for sure.
Now, I understand that Kesher Israel in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is having a cantorial Shabbaton. That's on February 12th and 13th, and my friend Yaakov Motzin is going to be davening there. That's quite a special Shabbos weekend.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Chazan Motzin is terrific, and his wife is an old dear friend of mine,
uh-huh.
And I've actually accompanied him a couple of times, and he's tremendous.
Yes.
I'm looking very much to hearing him that weekend.
I'm going to try to be there myself.
Oh,
my listeners, primarily, most of them are receiving my monthly cantorial calendar, and there is a flyer included in the one that's going out, next week for February, and all the information for anybody who wants to try to make it there, all the information is there. Are there facilities nearby, hotels?
There are some hotels in further downtown in Harrisburg.
Uh-huh.
The shul is kind of in the middle.
I see.
So I believe there are some hotels that are in walking distance of the shul.
Sure. Well, I'm sure anybody can call the shul.
Yes,
all the information. Kesher Israel in the congregation. And why don't we play a couple of selections, some of your favorites.
Okay.
I know that you mentioned The Day Will Come is a favorite of yours.
Yes, it is. It's a beautiful song. It's an original. It's not one of his parodies, and it's not one of his comedy numbers. It's a very serious number that he wrote about about Soviet Jewry. He wrote it at the time that
mm-hmm.
It was a big thing. It's a beautiful song. It really tells the story of what was going on then. And it's truly one of my favorites of his.
That was on an album called Lema'an Tzion. And
right.
Trying to figure out when that I'm looking at the album right now. They never give the dates, but it was recorded in 1976, May of 1976.
Mm-hmm.
So this will
that
be
sounds right.
The day will come,
okay.
And we'll hear others. So let me just connect this. Coming up, please bear with me. You know, technical problems always occur.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, while I'm straightening this out, was Rabbi Shulman the rabbi in Long Branch when you were there?
No, it was Rabbi Roth.
Oh.
Rabbi Toby Roth. Was uh-huh. He was there for many years.
Okay, so here we go. The day will come.
Each day he puts on his tefillin in the cellar, and there he davens in a whisper to Hashem. For even though they all know he is Jewish, he cannot be a Jew in front of them. And so he studies the Torah in secret and makes a bracha that no one else can hear. But he'll continue to do these precious mitzvahs till the day he can do them without fear. And the day will come, when the tiny spark he kept alive will burst into flame. The day will come, the day will come. He'll no longer be in Russia, he will hear his Jewish name. The day will come, the day will come. He will feel that he's a living link within the Jewish chain. The day will come, the day will come. He will make a bracha loud and clear and hear Amen. Vayayimahu, vayayimahu, vayayimahu yiyeh Hashem echad ushmo yechad. Vayayimahu, vayayimahu, vayayimahu yiyeh Hashem echad ushmo yechad. Each day she takes her tattered tillum to the cellar, and there in silence she whispers to Hashem. For even though they all know she is Jewish, she cannot be a Jew in front of them. And so she lights the Shabbos candles in a closet and makes the bracha that no one else can hear. But she'll continue to do these precious mitzvahs till the day she can. The day will come when the tiny spark she kept alive will burst into flame. The day will come, the day will come. She'll no longer be in Russia, she will hear her Jewish name. The day will come, the day will come. She will feel that she's a living link within the Jewish chain. The day will come, the day will come. She will make that
the day will
Wow, that's such a terrific selection.
Yeah.
You know, Mark, it's a generational thing. I would say someone under the age of 50 listening to this program, or even maybe a little older, they don't really know the struggle that there was in getting the Soviet Jews out of Russia. A good friend of mine was one of the leaders of the student struggle for Soviet Jewry, Glenn Richter, and we're still very active. But listening to that song, they may not even realize, unless they study a little history or they go to Israel, you know, see the million or so Russian Jews that were saved.
Yes, that's probably quite true. But it's a great, great song.
It really is. You mentioned another favorite of yours is Hineni, but why don't you first just tell us a little bit about Seymour's relationship with the whole Rechnitzer Reject albums?
Well, he was he worked on those together with Chazen Martin Davidson, who was a chazen in New Jersey at one time. I believe he was in Linden, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the other main cast member of the Rechnitzer Reject was Chazen Simon Spiro, who is, like Martin, is British. I think they're both British. I actually had the opportunity, I've accompanied both of them, actually. I accompanied Martin a couple of times at the Pineview when I was working there, and then when the Pineview closed, I went to work at the Homowack for several years, and so I got to accompany him there as well. He at one time, besides performing himself, he managed some other acts in the Jewish business, and then I also accompanied Simon also at the Homowack, both very, very funny gentlemen, very creative individuals, and the three of them together came up with some classic things that they did on the Rechnitzer albums. I believe they did, I don't remember if it was 7 or if it was 9 Rechnitzer albums.
Oh, there are 9. I have 9.
All right, because I know they did one around the time that my wife and I got married, because there was a song that Seymour wrote on there that he sang at our wedding, and it was around that time that album was released. The song he sang at our wedding was called Mashgiach. There was a very popular song in Jewish music at
Mashgiach,
the time.
Mashgiach.
Right.
Yeah.
Called Mashiach, Mordechai Ben David made popular.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, Seymour wrote some stuff for Mordechai. I'm not sure which selections he wrote, but I know he did. He wrote stuff for him. He wrote for a lot of different people. I know that there's on some of the there's a record, some recordings called Variations. And he wrote some of the lyrics on some of the selections on those albums. Those were done by, they featured Gershon Voroba. I don't know, Gershon was one of the people I mentioned before. He used to call Seymour for assistance with lyrics. And Seymour would make him crazy because he would instantly have what Gershon was asking for, instead of, like, and he would say, Seymour, take a little time, it's okay. No. Seymour and Gershon's father, who was a chazen, were also very close friends.
I see. Okay, so a little background about Hineni.
The Hineni is, as he used to introduce it, and I believe they introduced it on the album as well, is allegedly a chazen on a dairy farm, singing the Hineni, which is the prayer that the Chazen sings before Musaf on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur,
right,
where he asks God to accept his representation of the congregation. And so Seymour wrote this piece. It was Hineni. It's a chazen on a dairy farm accompanied by a very unusual choir.
Okay, so let's hear this from Rechnitzer Reject albums. Hineni.
Now we take you to a cantorial recording studio in the Catskill Mountains. An unidentified Jewish dairy farmer, interrupted by a member of his staff, loses his place but not his chazonish gefiel.
Condensed and enriched, homogenized and pasteurized. Oy, pasteurized and homogenized, pasteurized and homogenized, homogenized and pasteurized, pasteurized and homogenized, pasteurized and homogenized, pasteurized and homogenized, homogenized and pasteurized. Pasteurized and homogenized and fortified. And fortified. And fortified. With vitamin D. Holy cow.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Only he could have done something.
Yes.
Like that. First of all, he realize how great his voice is in order to be able to do that.
Yes. For sure. For sure.
And I believe that was Marty Davidson speaking at the beginning.
Yes. He does come in with that. Well, he's recorded quite extensively. All the bits about the cantor in the. Navy and the cantor, I think most of them are Seymour, aren't they? Or are they...
cantor in the Navy?
Well, yes, there's the cantor in the Army, there's a cantor in the Swiss Navy. I mean, you know, it's one of these ridiculous
things.
I remember
the cantor in the Army one. I'm not so sure. I'm not sure if that was Seymour.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, I always loved Borough Park. As a matter of fact... for years, when I gave a presentation on the introduction to Jewish music, or I also used to give a class on Yiddish music, that was always a key component. And I would hand out the Yiddish and the translation. Of course, not everyone speaks Yiddish, but it's such a great song, such a great selection.
Yes, it is.
I'd like to play it. Do you have any... comments or background about that?
The only thing I would say is that it's always been my belief that that song sold that first album. I think that song was key to the success of that first Reckmesser album. Not that the other stuff wasn't good, but that song was so terrific. That's what I think got people's attention on the that's what drew people to that first album.
Uh-huh. I think it is a classic. So let's hear...
I thought it was brilliant. So
here is Seymour Rockoff singing his own composition of Borough Park.
Thank you. schön Zeite nicht. Ich fuhr zurück, zurück zu dir, mein Teurer, mein Baropas. Mein Herz ist nicht schwer, ich sorg sich nicht mehr. Seuf, seuf, ich fuhr heim zu euch, mein Baropas. Dort, wo die Schabbes und die Jontif ist nicht schwach, wo jeden lernen ein Blatt, Tag und Nacht. Sag jedem dem Wort, als du bist mein Ort. Ich wenk noch euch, mein Goldene, mein Boropark. Ich mein nicht Zentropark, ich mein nicht Prospektpark, nur dir allein schön Boropark. Sag alle mein Freund, Abob und Heim, ich kauf a Kondominium in Boropark. Mit Schlafzimmer vier und zwei Chandelier. Vor mir wird lichtig freilich sein in Boropark. Es ist mir finster, kalt wie Winter, wo ich bin.
That's so classic, really so yeah. Great. Yes. Well, I wish you success in Tel Aviv, and I'm sure you'll be back for the dedication in February.
Yes, I'll be coming back on my wife and my son and I are leaving on this Wednesday, and we're coming back on the 31st. So we'll definitely be back for that.
Okay, I'll be playing this probably that week I have to get at my calendar, but it'll be enough time for people to be able to plan to come to that event. Again, it's at Kesher Israel Congregation in Harrisburg, and Yaakov Motzen will be davening for the weekend. Any other comments about Seymour?
No, just that he was very definitely going to be very sorely missed by a lot of people. Obviously, everybody in the family, we all miss him dearly. All his fans and his friends in Chazanos and everybody in the music business, his talent is a tremendous loss, not only in terms of singing and Chazanos, but he also was a very talented pianist, and in addition to helping people with lyrics, he also did background soundtracks for people like Paul Zim. I know he recorded some background tracks for him for some of his children's recordings that he did over the years. They were very close friends.
Yes.
So he would call Seymour and say, I want to do this and this and this. And Seymour had a little studio in his basement with keyboards, with rhythm sections, and he would put something together and send it to Paul, and then Paul would record the vocals. maybe add some more instruments to it on this end, uh-huh. and then produce the recording. So he was a tremendous amount of musical talent. Besides, very creative, certainly. I learned a tremendous amount from him just by sitting in shul and listening to him daven. He was very strict on pronunciation of the words when he davened, and it's something I realized after meeting him and listening to him daven. The first few times, I would be sitting there listening to him and wondering what he was doing, and then I looked at the words and realized he's saying them the right way. The other people that I heard previously were not. He was pronouncing the words the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned a tremendous amount from him doing that. There's a piece that he used to do in shul that I'm hoping I can find that he wrote out on sheet music. He set the Av Harachamim that we say before Yisker to the music from Schindler's List.
Wow.
And it's absolutely magnificent. Mm. And the shul used to love it when he would do it. I am still going through his stuff, but I would, I'm hoping I can find either the sheet music or that he recorded it somewhere so that I can learn it, because it's absolutely beautiful. And he made it fit the words perfectly.
Okay, Mark, I appreciate your taking the time to share your reminiscences about your late father-in-law. He is sorely missed by all of us who knew him and knew of his talent. And he will be remembered fondly, that's for sure.
Yes,
sure.
I think his music will live on for a long, long time after him.
Okay, so have a safe trip to Israel, and
thank you.
We'll be in touch.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, shalom.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed this first hour of this two-hour special in memory of the late Seymour Rockoff. Stay tuned for the next hour. A lot of interesting interviews and some more of his wonderful music.